Hey, kia ora team, thanks for joining us today. This is a bit of a different introduction because I normally don't do an introduction, but I wanted you to know that there are some technical difficulties with this episode. Speaking to the lovely Jason Kerrison from Op Shop, and he lives in the winterless north, the far north, where the internet is pretty awful. So there is a moment within this podcast where there is a very bad echo. I just wanted to give you a heads up so you don't get to that point and go, oh, what's this, and turn off. It lasts for less than 2 minutes. It's only on voice, and I only ask three questions. So at about the 6 minute stage, you'll probably hear and see that there is a terrible echo on this podcast. It only lasts for a couple of minutes, and then Jason and I reconfigure the whole thing. He jumps on his laptop and we continue on with the conversation for the rest of the time we're together. So wanted to let you know not to freak out. It's on my end, the echo. Keep watching. It's only 2 minutes, and enjoy Jason Kerrison.
Right, I was just playing the joke. I think it was half the issue.
Right. Well, let's just jump into it and see what happens, eh?
Thank you, Pat.
We are recording it, so if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. We can just hit stop and wish each other well and try for another day or something.
Okay, man.
All right, let's get into it. You said to me just before we came on, you were putting your dog outside. What kind of dog do you have?
She's a Kai Tai special is her designation up here, but she's a rescue dog.
Oh, nice.
Panda is her name, but we, just to find out what we might have been in store for, we had a DNA test done on her. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah, and she turns out she's all the highly energetic dogs you could possibly imagine. She's got blue heeler in her, so she wants to work. She's got collie in her. She's got whippet. Did I say boxer? Boxer.
Wow.
Yeah, she's also a Labrador, so she'll eat almost anything but the food we put in front of her.
I know what you mean. My dog is my dog's in my studio with me. I can actually, there you go. There's my dog right now. She's asleep in the studio with me. He's a border collie, and that's that energetic sort of little thing that goes on. So every day we have to make sure we get to the park with something like this, and she runs for 20 minutes until she can't walk anymore, and then she spends a good portion of the day doing this. So this is,
I like that you said with this. You know, it's one of those things you can't mention around here. We started spelling it out, but now she can spell it.
Yeah, no, I'm the same, and I can't say it with the word C-A-R and the word P-A-R-K. And with that word as well, all words we can't say. And if we do,
how old is she, Pat?
Oh, she's not quite two. In fact, I could probably do this. Like, I'll do the code words. I sometimes take the dog in the car with the ball up to the park. That's what we do sometimes.
Oh, cute. She knows you're joking. That's good.
She knows you're joking. She's ready to rest. She's already had one run today. Sometimes I take her twice because.
Oh, true.
We're in you're in Northland, eh? Is that right?
Yeah, we're in Northland. We're up in the hills. So yeah. We're pretty much Ara Park. We're very lucky. So we just let her roam. It's that she's the kind of dog that I don't think we could have in an urban area. She just disappeared very, very quickly, very easily.
Yeah. No, I'm quite lucky in Dunedin. We've got official dog parks. And we've got plenty of parks. Oh, I just said the P word again and her head went up. And we've got plenty of other PARKs around the place. But she's a really good listener and she stays close. And so I can take her to just a normal PARK, a normal large grassed area. And she'll stay with me even when we're throwing the ball backwards and forwards. She's a good un. I've had a few and she's a good un.
Yeah. I've got a cat that's about 19 years old now. And I had I really didn't think I'd have a cat for 19 years. I'm more a dog guy.
Yeah.
And she's the best thing that happened from my previous marriage, from my only marriage. Oh. So, nice. Yeah, I got to keep the cat, and or she, he, gosh, 19 years, I think I'll get that right, but I'm turning into my mum. But no, we're very lucky to have our little dog. She's a rescue dog, actually, from Donna Doolittle's.
Yep.
So she was found in a forest at about, I think she was 3 weeks old when we when she was found. And so she's extremely needy, man. You know, she anytime anyone comes up the drive, she, you know, her ears literally look painted on. She doesn't respond. Usually she's great, but suddenly she's completely, totally not great. You know, you have to manage her and just put her on the kennel at that point.
Yeah, I describe my one as, like, if people want to know about her character, I go, if she was at school, she'd be the nervous kid, you know?
Right.
And I've been told, I don't know this, maybe it's the same with your dog, that when dogs are smarter, often that kind of nervousness, and that is more of an attribute, because they actually go, oh, fuck, something's different, because they're not that big, lovable Labrador that just doesn't really know what's going on. They actually know what's going on. And if they know what's going on, they're like, hang on, this is 8% different. I'm not quite comfortable with this. It's slightly different. I don't know if that's true or not, but I've had like a dog trainer tell me that the smarter the breed, often the more sort of jittery and nervous they can be. So she's a little nervous one, but she's also the most loving dog. Well, love's an interesting thing, isn't it? Whether the attribute or the action of love is the same between dogs and humans, is it from human? But you know what I mean. Like, she will literally get on you and lean into you and put her head under your thing, and it looks like she's cuddling you. The kids love it. The kids are like, oh, my goodness. You know, they've got dogs at their mum's
place
as well.
She loves me. It's funny. Are we anthropomorphizing it and just saying she's loving it, but actually she's enjoying the warmth more than anything?
But it's nice. It's nice when they do lean up against you, and they're actually like, she sits like, I'm sitting at the couch or something with my legs slightly apart, and she'll sit between them and lean against my leg. And that feeling of having her right, like, on my leg the whole way up from my ankle to my knee is just, it's different. I've never had a dog like that before.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, no, we adore her. We adore her. We feel very lucky. We've just had a baby about 8 weeks ago. 8 weeks last, eight, 9 weeks come Monday. No, 9 weeks come Sunday at 5:20 a.m. And we were just a little bit concerned that because she is so full on, so much energy, and so needy, that we might have a few issues with her adapting to the baby. But it's actually just been really lovely to see. It's just been very welcoming and protective, actually.
Oh, nice.
My partner's mum came up and the baby was crying on her mum, and she kind of tried to nuzzle her way, not aggressively, but just kind of nuzzle her way between the mum and the baby, or between grandma and the baby, until she stopped crying. It's pretty cool.
Nice. Yeah, you see that sometimes online, people filming with their new babies and their pets. And the relationship between the baby and the pet can be quite strong.
Yeah, you never know, though, until it shows up, and until they have that interaction. But no, we're lucky on both calls, actually. The baby's amazing. You know, you read these horror stories of not only the birth process itself, let alone the 9 months prior to the birth process, but and all the things that may or may not go right. You know, it can be pretty harrowing for many couples, and even just single woman, right? But we were particularly lucky, I think, and we feel very blessed. I'm not a religious man, but I feel very blessed.
It's funny how non-religious people still will say things like, I'm praying for you, or invoking the name of God or whatever.
Yeah.
I guess it's part of our culture, saying every now and again, oh, thank goodness, oh, thank God, oh, thoughts and prayers, all that kind of stuff is a fairly common practice.
Yep. It's interesting, though. I've always been interested in what, you know, obviously sound, pouring the coffee here, very relaxed. and it's interesting where words come from, right? And so, you know, you look at, what was I looking at, something? Oh, my partner and I are finally studying Māori together. So every morning we go through Scotty Morrison's book and for half an hour. But I noticed, you know, the name of the sun for sun is Ra. And that's whether people may know it or not. That's the Egyptian name for sun god as well. And so, and I think Mum is also one of those types of it's like an utterance that almost it comes before the meaning of the word. There's a physiological kind of, I noticed particularly with our baby, we've learned this baby language where she makes certain sounds, certain vowels, and that means certain things or certain reasons for her crying. Now, she doesn't necessarily know what she's saying.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? But she's uttering those sounds, and the scientists have come to realize that those sounds describe a certain, are prescribed to a certain way she's feeling, or hunger, or she might have needed a nappy change or something. So, I don't know, I wonder if I certainly say blessed a lot.
Yeah.
And I think it sounds like it's a blessed word, you know.
I like the thing about the babies, that thought, because the idea of mum, you know, before they're saying mum, they are saying mum, 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 mum. So it must be an innate vocalizing they do. The question is, are they therefore then attributing that to mum? Or are we as adults saying, yes, that's right, I'm your mum, 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 mum. And so we're teaching them that word means what it is, or are they innately doing it for some other reason, you know? So I don't know.
True. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What came first, the mum or the word? I don't know. I don't know. It's a good question. Yeah. Because if we suddenly just gone, oh, she's saying mum.
Yeah.
Did mum exist before she started doing that? I don't know, the lady probably did, you know?
Yeah, so that chicken or egg thing. So when the whatever you would consider the first baby or the first person using the word mum, is that because the baby vocalized that and the parent attributed it to themselves?
Yeah, right.
Or was that already common parlance, and did the mother then confirm to the baby that that's the name they should use?
Yeah, I am your mum.
Oh, she said mum first. We used baby sign language with our kids as well.
That was a lot
of fun. Yeah, when we had, I mean, I've got teenagers now, but we did baby sign. That's great. And it actually helps their vocab as well. But so the kids could communicate. You know, there was, I think we did please, and this was like drink or milk or something. And,
milk, yeah, milk more.
Yeah, and thank you. And I can't remember all of them, but there was about a half dozen ones. And so the kids were able to signify when they wanted to drink or wanted to eat, or, you know, so saying cool. Thank you and the kind of stuff. And they get it, you know, they get it before they can speak. And then of course it's like, not be offensive to parents and children, but it's almost like training your dog on some level. Then they understand that they can replace that with the word thank you. And then, so they learn that is thank you. And then they start to use thank you instead of that. And it works well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what we did.
Made a big difference for you.
It just means it's a communication thing. I mean, you're saying, I guess what I hear you saying is you can kind of understand what the noises relate to with what they want or need. It's just another one of those. It's like, it's the same sort of thing, but they can actually do a physical action, which is not like an interpretation of a noise. It's the actual action. For milk or food or please or. Yeah.
Yeah. They're actually communicating. We've just started doing like very, very simple communication, just, you know, because she's barely, you know, she's only 8 weeks out, 9 weeks out, but we're poking tongues and seeing if she will poke her tongue out. And so we do the same, and then we respond and she giggles, and it's like, wow, that's pretty, I mean, that's amazing. I think that's a really beautiful way to be able to even communicate with a kid at that level after 8 weeks, for her to be able to respond and then have a wee giggle. It's like, that's blessed, man. That's cool.
I can still remember the first time my kid fed me, like my eldest fed me, like sitting in it, so they were learning, you know, about eating, they were feeding themselves. It was apple, I remember it. And then they were like, you know, to dad. And I'd eat it out of their hand. And then that became a game. But I can still remember that really clearly. Like the first time, it was almost like, well, this is, hang on, if I'm having this, I wonder if that big dude wants any of this. And it was, it's really clear memory in my mind from raising the kids the first time that sort of happened. And all kids kind of do that at some stage, but I remember the first time it happened.
How old was she or he?
I'm just trying to think about the house I was in, under one, but more than 6 months, probably in that kind of vicinity, maybe 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 months, something like that. Can't remember exactly, but not one. So yeah, it's cool. It's cool. Kids are cool, eh?
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah.
It's funny going through the process of like the kids getting older, and there's a moment where you kind of go, oh, this is my last nappy, and you celebrate it. And then you get to a point where you look at other people with little kids and the stage they're going in, and you kind of go, even though it was nice to get past, I kind of miss that. I'm kind of jealous about, like, I saw a TikTok the other day with a dad talking to his, like, would have been, like, barely talking sentences, but like 3-word sentences, you know, like cat outside, like really little kid, and just kind of go, oh, I miss that. You know, I'm past that, and I was happy to be past it, but watching someone else do it, I'm kind of a bit jealous as well. I kind of miss it a bit.
I got to be honest, I missed about probably 10 seconds of that. We must have had a dropout in the middle of the, in the hills. And so we, for the first 3 years, we had to rely on our LTE, you know, phones. And that wasn't terribly reliable. You had to actually walk down the hill about 100 meters to use the phone. And we've since had Starlink installed about probably 6 months ago, and that has been a game changer. It's good to be able to have you know, any kind of chat, really, versus nothing.
Yeah, technology is amazing, eh? I mean, I'm in Dunedin, and our internet here is fiber, and it's a gig, so you know it's kind of probably the fastest non-commercial you can get in New Zealand at the moment. I don't know, maybe there's faster, but certainly if you'd call it mainstream internet, probably the fastest. And it kind of goes the other way. I look, sometimes I think about, well, I'm in a big monolith of a house, and thinking kids are in secondary school, you know, if I'm leaving here in 5 years sort of thing, because that would make sense after the kids have moved on or done, I'll get a smaller place. And then starting to go, well, what if I got a smaller place? Where would I go? And one of the first things I do when I look at the areas is what's the internet like there?
What's the internet doing? Yeah.
Yeah. What's it like there? How am I going to work if it's only ADSL? Whereas people like yourself would probably dream for ADSL. Like, yeah.
Dot matrix internet. Yeah, technology is quite phenomenal, man. I don't have many regrets, but I do have a few. And one of them is not probably picking up on. I was just a real, I don't know, I was a little, I wouldn't say nerd. I was more just fascinated by computers and tech stuff even when I was 11. And I remember my mum breaking her back to buy me a ZX81, and you know, it was a piece of shit, but it was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, look back on it now, you know, the kind of thing it could do. I mean, it took us BASIC. I'm not even sure if BASIC was as a language anymore, but the introduction that it gave me into the world of computing, I should have just picked it up with it, because it was something I, when I first got to high school, I just excelled at it. Like, I got the top marks in the school, and I think I was just bored by it, though it didn't at that point interest me, so I didn't follow through with it. But damn, I wish I had now.
What era are we talking? What was your last year of school?
Oh man, so not 90.
Yeah, same as me. My last year of school was 1990.
Right.
So we are the same. Oh, Commonwealth Games, last year of school, 91, first year of university.
That's it, right?
So I would have been sitting on those computers in the computer lab the same as you, doing BASIC and working things out. I went to university, well, AUT actually, or ATI at that time, and did computing for a bit. But just, I mean, it's always difficult to talk to someone who the country knows as creative, such as yourself, from what you do in your art. But, you know, right, as a creative myself in a different field sort of thing, it's like, it's just sitting there watching numbers and, you know, C++ and COBOL and all these things. I was just like, it's not me. But much like yourself, it's not necessarily a regret. But if you look, we all look back in our lives and we go, you know, God, if only I had bought Bitcoin when it first came out, or whatever the thing is that we could have done that we never did. You know, you're like, I looked at NZME the other day, the radio stations, and when the whole COVID thing kicked in and everyone radio sport shut down and all that kind of stuff, their shares dropped to 25 cents a share. And I think at the moment they're $2.25. I'm like, geez, why didn't we drop 10 grand on shares at 25 cents a share at that point? So, but you never know. It could have also gone the other way.
I'll tell you what, though. Had I had the money, which I completely didn't, when we got thrown into our first lockdown, I think that's when oil went to negative $40 a barrel.
Yeah.
And I dare guess at what it is now, but at petrol at like $3.14 a litre or something now, it's probably be doing pretty good. But would you feel good about making money off that? I'm not sure I feel great about that.
Well, but that's the thing, isn't it? It's risk and reward. I mean, there is a risk. It's like, you know, I speak to people who aren't making any money on their KiwiSaver and they're in the low category, and I'm like, you might not be making any money, but you're also not risking losing tons, because I know other people who are actually going backwards. They're putting money into their KiwiSaver every month and then their amount's going down at the end of every year. Because it's getting gambled with on stock markets and stuff. And I was like, well, it's risk reward. So
yeah, I think there's also that ethical, you know, practices and in terms of what you invest in, right? So I just don't. It's like I couldn't put anything into a money that was, for instance, I don't know, building nuclear weapons, for instance. You know, I just couldn't conscionably do that and take the money happily, and wouldn't seem right. But Bitcoin, that would have been handy. I got into something called Theta, because I've been a fan of cryptocurrency for, I don't know, since 2017, I guess.
Yeah.
Actually, no. I tried to buy some around about 2014, maybe even earlier. But I couldn't even get my head around how to do it back then. Mm. And I ended up invariably and ultimately losing, it was $100 or something silly, but $500 in Bitcoin back then to what it is now, maybe not now, but maybe last year.
Yeah.
That could have been a game changer.
Crypto is, my concern around crypto is it's a little bit like any, not that necessarily crypto is a Ponzi scheme, but, you know, Ponzi schemes, people make money who get in early and get out early, and then everyone else loses. I think that's my feeling around much crypto as well. People who got in early when it was, you know, a quarter of a cent a Bitcoin and then sold it when it was $2,000 a Bitcoin, great. They've made tons of money and stuff, but it's basically an imaginary currency that's ones and zeros. It doesn't have any tangible asset to it. You're kind of trading on the name only. I just can't imagine that's going to be the thing that survives forever, and you know, like physical money is often backed by a something physical, like a gold exchange, like the gold standard or something like that. So there's something else to put to it, whereas I don't see how any of the cryptos have something behind them.
I mean, it's interesting what you just said there, right? Is name a currency that actually is backed by anything like that anymore. It's more backed by the faith of in the country that's distributing that particular fiat or fake currency. But
yeah,
as far as I remember, I thought gold was depegged from the American dollar, like 71, I think it was, by Nixon. And so since then, they've just been able to literally print that money, and that's exactly what America's been doing.
Yeah.
And so it's not even worth the money. It's not. I'm not printed on anymore, because, you know, I think only 2% or 3% of the actual circulating currency is physical. So in a sense, the other 98-odd% is still a digital currency.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean,
someone sitting in the bottom of the White House probably just clicking your mouse.
Yeah. And then you see places like Greece, not necessarily now, but certainly in the global financial crisis in 2008-09, having to print so much money that their million, whatever the Greek currency was worthless, and they have to rejig their whole economy because of that. Yeah, you're right, though. The gold standard is not necessarily used anymore, is it? I wonder, that's why people still buy, I guess. I mean, like, if you were to invest in a quote-unquote currency or a item of value, perhaps that's why people still do kind of stock away, bank away their gold bullion and gold bars and silver, and that's always there. It's like when you buy a house. I used to think about buying a house versus the stock market. Not that I've ever been involved in the stock market, but my kind of idea was, like now, even if there is a, you know, if the housing market drops off and the values drop off a bit, you've still got the house you're living in with walls and a roof, and the property you're on with your veggie garden, and, you know, where your portfolio, the stock market can disappear overnight, and has for many people many times. Even if the economy crashed and houses drop by 50%, banks aren't going to call those in, because they'd be calling in 80% of the houses. You've still got a physical house to live in, and the literal bricks and mortar, which I know is not the most sensible when it comes to making money, but to me it feels like the most sensible when it comes to being secure.
Yeah, that's a good call. Yeah. I'm a fan of silver bullion over gold, and I've, you know, over the few years when I have a little, just a little bit of, I'll just ferret a little bit away.
Nice.
In the hope that one day that'll be the nest egg that, you know, gives us a bit more security as well. But I mean, I don't know, I think Bitcoin, or at least crypto, I think it's not going anywhere. You know, you've got billions, if not probably trillions of dollars being spent on it now in terms of the infrastructure. I kind of see it like in terms of being the utility of it, at least, I feel like there'll be a moment where, like Uber or like FPOS, you know, so you'd understand because we're kind of from the same era, but when mum or dad would go out with their credit card, not that they had a lot of credit cards, but you'd see other people using credit cards and they would put it on that snap thing, and that would be how the transaction was made, you know, all your personal information right there, and they just trusted that was in the bank. But suddenly we were into FPOS, and you could just, you know, now you can wave your card in front of the machine or not even have to do that. And almost like Uber as well, you know, there's this technology that suddenly is just there, and it's nascent, it virtually doesn't exist. Then it's sticks its hand up above the other taxi ranks, and before you know it, all the other taxis are just sitting in a line and you're catching Uber on your phone. So I just feel like with the amount of infrastructure being invested in, and because I'm actually learning a bit about it at the moment, I'd actually like to get into being a blockchain developer.
Oh, yeah.
Is where I'd like to go. I think mostly, man, since I had the baby, and this is a very new thing, I'm just reluctant to leave home. I don't want to go home. I don't want to go anywhere else but be home, you know. So I've really had to dig deep and just consider, you know, what could I do that I'm interested in, and maybe it's me looking back into my life and thinking, man, you could have done something with that if you had a real interest in it, and I still do. So now, yeah, I've enrolled into a few courses and plan to kind of get my head around that over the next few months, and we'll see what happens. But
cool. That's cool, man. I was going to say to you, if you're going to be a blockchain developer, you might want to get better internet.
Yeah, that's right, man. Yeah,
no, you might have to run a significant cable out from somewhere up the hill in Northland there for you.
Yeah, I mean it's good enough, and you do most of the work on your machine anyway, and you kind of upload it from the block that you've got on your machine to wherever you need to the what do they call it, the Ethereum virtual network or Ethereum virtual computer. So yeah, we'll see how it goes. But I think the other consideration was that, you know, with what's happened over the last few years, I wasn't entirely sure if I was going to, or even if I wanted to, go out and gig anymore.
Right.
I just wasn't sure if it was a possibility. I wasn't even sure if we were going to be let out of our front gates again. But things are shifting, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, they are shifting. It'd be fascinating to get your take on all of that, because obviously you've been in the news and in the media for the last, probably since the Wellington sort of protest was when, I mean, I saw you in the news talking about various issues to do with what the government was doing in the country. And I'm happy to open up the space to that conversation and get your take on that, and get what your thoughts are and what we are, because obviously as a performer, like I've been, like, it's funny you talk about being at home. So I'm in my studio, right? This is in my house. As the crow flies, my bedroom is about 3 meters that way, up in the next floor. And for people like me, the lockdowns didn't do. In fact, they kind of almost helped, because all of a sudden everyone was at home, and so I could get Joel Tobeck on the podcast, and I could get these people because they were around, sitting around doing nothing. So I actually kind of found them. Not that I enjoyed them, but they didn't impact my output of work, if I can put it that way.
Yeah.
And I have some clients here in Dunedin who run shops and businesses, and one of them was a, what do they call it? Not the emergency service, but the services that continued to go on as a food producer. And of course, they exploded in work, so that caused more work for me. So personally, whilst I hated being locked down, like my outpouring of work, and also this is sort of my creative process, I create digital content, wasn't impacted. But someone like you, who obviously, I mean, I was looking at, actually at the Op Shop Facebook page, I'll bring it up, even up until, where is it?
Here is Op Shop Facebook. Wow.
I was looking at that just before I came on to talk to you, and I'll bring the screen up. And I can even see there that, you know, there was things getting cancelled, performances getting cancelled last year. And this is, you know, this has been, I guess, the last 2 years for, I mean, we did have that kind of 14 months in between where we in New Zealand lived like no one else in the world with no COVID in the country. But in general, and we're seeing it now, there's been a lockdown. So tell us your experiences. How's it been?
Horrible. Yeah, horrible. Again, the gate being closed, you know, not feeling like your freedoms have been impinged upon. And without going into, I guess, the medical side of it, because I'm certainly no medical professional, so I'm very reluctant to, you know, talk about any of that. What I probably would say, though, is that I got really, really despondent and really bummed out, actually, that, you know, you've got these, any dissenting debate, almost all dissenting debate, or actually any debate, shut down. You know, highly qualified medical professionals and specialists being muzzled, literally. That seemed highly suspicious to me right at the beginning. And so I wish those people had an opportunity get an opportunity to say what they wanted to say. That would be helpful for everyone. So I won't dwell on that, but my experiences, you'll notice on that Op Shop page, that was supposed to be last New Year's, but I just had I just read the zeitgeist, I guess, and I called the Christchurch City Council at the time and said, hey, look, dudes, I'm probably not going to be popular for this, but if this becomes mandated, I cannot conscionably come down and do this show. And I was offered a potential exemption about it. I was like, man, that would be so hypocritical of me to do that. And so I just had to be very clear and say, hey, look, well, I'm gutted because I'd love to play. I really would love to play, especially back home in Christchurch, to a really good audience in Hagley Park and with my mates and do that. But yeah, I gave them probably about 4 months' notice, 4 or 5 months' notice. And I even told the guys in the band, I was like, hey, look, if you need to find someone to front the band because you still want to do the show, I completely get it. I mean, it sucks, but I completely get it. So if you feel you need to tag me out, I can take that on the chin. That's fine.
Has that happened? Because I was looking at your, I mean, I'm not saying this is all real, but your Op Shop Wikipedia page talks about past members, Jason Kerrison, as if you're no longer a part of Op Shop.
Does it? I don't know, man.
Yeah. I know, like that's why I'm asking. That's what I'm asking. It says right there, past members, Jason Kerrison. Do we need to announce something to the world, Jason?
Yeah, probably.
Well, that Wikipedia is wrong.
Honest, man. I can't see it. I can't see that happening again.
How come?
Yeah. Other things happened in the background as a result of my decision about that.
Amongst you guys?
Yeah, and it kind of revealed to me a few things, and it's sad. I think what's happened with this, you know, situation means that a lot of families have been broken up, a lot of relationships have been broken up, a lot of workplaces have been completely polarized and divided. I think that's probably, it's a very sad thing, right? So
you're talking more the not about the op shop. Now you're talking about in society in general when you're talking about a lot of relationships.
I'm reluctant to get into the details with, you know, with op shop. But suffice to say, it would be difficult for us to come together again without really addressing what happened there. So, because the thing is, like most people, to me at least, they're like, man, you're being a conspiracy theorist. There's no way they're going to mandate those. It's completely impossible and implausible. I'm like, well, you're entitled to your opinion, you know, and I'm entitled to mine. I mean, the read of a good, healthy democracy is that I'm allowed to have an opinion that you can disagree with. And I'm totally fine with that. And actually totally fine with being wrong as well. But turns out I wasn't. So, yeah.
When you say you weren't wrong, about what specifically are you meaning?
Oh, the mandates at that point. I was pretty clear in my interpretation of what was going down that the mandates were going to be implemented.
So just so I'm clear as well, just take one half step back. You're saying if the gig on New Year's Eve had been a vaccinated only gig mandated, you couldn't perform. That's what we're saying?
That's what I said.
Yeah. And so when you're saying that you were right, you're saying that you were projecting into the future that there was going to be restrictions put on people who weren't vaccinated. And that's what you were right about when I said, what were you right about?
Yeah.
Cool. With you.
Yeah. So that was really upsetting. Upsetting that they were mandated, because it just seemed like draconian measures to me. But that's only my opinion.
Yeah, sure.
But it also was sad that that resulted in a lot of people losing work, like me at that point, who decided that they didn't want to play along in that regard. So, yeah, I can't see us performing again.
That's sad. I mean, it's always a bit hard for me when I'm talking to musicians of my era. So I've been singing and whistling along to One Day right up until when you came on to the podcast, and I've had to like make sure, checking every time, that you weren't in the background there hearing me whistling away. And I do it all the time, you know. I did it to you know, what's her name from Golden Horse when I talked to her. And it's like, because when I'm talking to someone, I like to go into their, you know, catalog and have a listen.
Yeah, cool.
And then it gets stuck in my head, and then I'm like, okay, I gotta, how terrible would it be if Jason turned up and I'm still whistling along or singing along to One Day? It would just be awful.
That'd be cool, man.
So in other words, it's a part of, I mean, we're the same age. So it certainly is a part. And I was working for More FM from the late 1990s. So, you know, that's right in that period. So your catalog is a huge part of, I'm not going to say my upbringing, I was older than that, but certainly a part of my life in a very formative stage. So it's really sad to hear that you're saying, well, never say never. You're not saying never, but you're saying it's a, what I hear you saying is it would be a stretch for you guys to get back together under the current circumstances. There'd have to be some pretty significant water under the bridge for you guys to work together again.
Totally, man. Yeah, I felt betrayed, to be honest. But, yeah, that's probably the worst I could say about it.
Well, not to go into the details, but I'd be interested to know if you, I mean, not to talk specifics, but when you say that everyone's entitled to their own opinion, if they had a different opinion from you, I mean, unless it's obviously deeper than that, how does that become betrayal?
I can't go into the details.
Okay, all right. No. Fair enough. Obviously, there's more that you don't want to talk about.
I hear what you're saying, man. Yeah, totally. It's not just a decision I made. There was other things that happened as a result of the decision I made that made me go, huh, okay, well, that's not cool. So...
No, let's just stop. Don't say another word, because I don't want to. There's no need to push into a place you don't want to go to. That's not the kind of thing we do. No blood on the floor here, my friend. I am interested, though. It's kind of, maybe it's a part of the same conversation thematically, not about Op Shop, though. Is, I think, your latest Facebook Live post where you were talking about meditation, talking about the upcoming gigs, which we'll talk about in a minute. You you did say in that, and I wrote it down to ask you about it. You did say, quote, there was a few things recently I probably shouldn't have done, end quote. And then a part of that same conversation, you said there was a few things, quote, I shouldn't have said it. Talking about obviously some of the things over, I'm assuming over the last kind of 6 to 12 months, because that seems to be a time where, at least in the news, maybe I'm wrong because maybe they're not giving an accurate position, that perhaps there was conflict and perhaps there was, you know, there was reports of tweets with Nuremberg hangings being sent to media profiles and that kind of stuff. Was that the one?
Yeah.
That's Hillary Barry?
I don't mind calling it Hillary Barry. Like, that's I don't have an issue with that. I had an issue with myself not checking where that photo had come from.
Right.
And not deeply considering the impact that that might have for people who would take umbrage at that. And I was upset at myself for posting that. So that's what I really meant, is that I shouldn't have done that. And that's when I think also following that in that conversation from memory, is that I, not to say I shouldn't have called out Hillary, because she was just taking the piss out of people going down for their, freedom of expression and freedom to gather. And if you checked out her tweet that I responded to, you'd kind of get context of it.
Right.
But they didn't print it out in the news, which is interesting, isn't it? Yeah. So I think that's what I meant. I don't like upsetting anyone, man. I'm an empath, and when I hurt other people, I hurt too, and it gives me a real, a sense of regret that I did that.
Have you talked to her about that since? Like, have you? I'm not that you don't owe anything to anybody. You don't need to.
No, I don't. And look, I thought I was coming from, because she saw it as a veiled death threat, and I can't relate to that. Like, how someone would see that as a death threat. Like, she actually thinks legitimately that I would murder her. I don't understand that.
Well, okay, let's do it this way. If you were to do it again, like, to try and say what you were trying to say, but in an appropriate right way, like, what message were you actually trying to get across?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I was probably more saying, can we all please be, but this was responsive to that tweet that I was responding to, right?
Yeah.
That can we please, especially these people who have quite a large influence over quite a large part of the population, can we be really clear and mindful about what we're doing here? Because in my interpretation, and possibly wrong now from my look back on it, this could have people like her in a horrible, horrible situation where the general public, once they've woken up to what has potentially happened, coming for her in retribution, or people like her. And so, look, initially it was out of concern, and that very quickly got thrown back on me from Hillary's army of, I don't know, there must have been 2,000 responses also to that. And yeah, I did feel it. I was like, damn, yeah, that was regrettable. And I certainly didn't want her to know she's being threatened. And I don't know. I just can't believe she honestly thought that. It seems odd.
Is that really the only one? Like, just because I was, Googling around, there was also an incident with Russell Brown telling him to repent.
Oh, that was the same day within minutes. Yeah, totally, yeah. Because I just had the picture just come up. I'd been sent that, and I checked the source, man, and that was on me. And I feel like an idiot for not having done that. The cat's just. But I certainly should have done that, and I regret doing it with Russell. I'm a big fan of Russell, man, and I just felt like an absolute dick for having done that and made him feel that way. It's as simple as that.
So because I don't understand it altogether, right? I'm just an idiot in the bottom of the South Island who likes to talk to people. But what is the connection? If the image was correct, what were you trying to say about people being hung? And I don't want to necessarily bring up, you've said you made a mistake with sending it, but if it was actually what you thought it What were you trying to say?
So the mistake I made was not verifying that these people who were allegedly in this photo were the media who propagated what was going on there and had gone on trial and were hung for propagating that through the media, through mass media.
Right. And so you thought the image was an image of people in the media being hung.
Yes.
And you sent that to people in the media saying, look out, because this might happen to you. I'm paraphrasing. As a warning. As a warning.
Yeah. Like, can we all just kind of, I think I was looking for shock value in a sense, but you know, everything just seemed so inverted at that point anyway, man, that I
gotcha.
Maybe it didn't seem as shocking to me at the time until I heard the response and I was like, oh man, yeah, okay, you need to really check yourself here, Kerrison. Like, that's not right. Cool. So
I don't want to jump on you for this or continue to do, not we're debating, we're just talking about it, but if someone sent me an image, like you're saying the veiled death threats, because I didn't quite understand that part of it, now I do, and what the image was Nazi war criminals in Ukraine being hung after World War II.
I don't know. I still haven't had that confirmed whether it is
Okay.
But on the interests of waiting to at least find out whether that confirming that or not, it was...
But either way, it was the wrong. It wasn't the image you thought. Either way, it wasn't the image you thought it was.
I don't know.
Okay.
But you know what I mean. So if it had been the media that were in that photo, you're asking, would I still have posted it? Probably not now. Like in reflection, probably not now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because to be honest with you, I didn't actually. This is brand new information for me, so there's no setup context here. If someone sent me an image of a whole bunch that they said, look at all these podcasters, they were all shot against the wall for giving misinformation, you should watch out. That could actually feel like a threat to being, you're going to be shot against the wall.
But
when you say you don't see how it could be a veiled death threat, what I'm saying is I can, even though I'm not saying it was, to make that very clear, I can see how if someone sent me that image of podcasters, it could be taken as, I'm not saying it was, I'm not saying it should be, I'm not saying you did it,
you're right.
But it could be taken.
You're right. And look, it's probably more me understanding what veiled death threat means. So that's not saying you're going to murder me. It's saying, hey, this is a veiled death threat here. I get it now, man. And and hence the regret, right? But I still don't stand by what she said in the tweet that I responded to. So that's what I don't, that's what I mean in terms of that's what I don't regret. I don't mean standing up against people. I don't care what people think of me.
So you're saying that you were calling her out on something you disagreed with. You don't back down from calling her out. You are apologizing and backing away from the inappropriate way you did it.
Certainly. Yeah.
Gotcha. That's right. Look, that's interesting because I don't know. I know I don't really want to get into debate over vaccines and mandates and that kind of stuff. I don't know if it'll go anywhere. That's for another show on another day. But it does interest me. I do a daily news show as well, and we're still talking about like COVID, and we're still talking about, like, there was an item out yesterday talking about testing the wastewaters, showing that actually we're probably somewhere between half to maybe four times as many people have had COVID than they've got reported. So you know, and I've got friends who've had it very badly and friends who have walked through it without an issue. So I'm actively trying to avoid it. You know, I mask up and stuff when I go out, because even if it was just a very bad flu, I don't fucking want a very bad flu, even if that's all it was. Like, I'd rather not be out for a week, even if that's all it was. It's just, I hear you saying, and I hear you talking about division and a split and that kind of stuff, but the way it's kind of has come across to me, not from you, but in general, having followed this very closely, is that sort of, maybe not the mandates, I think the mandates are different, but when it comes to things like vaccines, sort of, let's say 80, even though 95% of the country is vaccinated, let's say 80% plus of the population kind of think or walk down one path, then maybe 15% who are on the fence but decided to get vaccinated because of their jobs or whatever. And then there's 5%, or it's actually technically 4%, but 5% at the end who are on the other side. To me, that doesn't feel like a split necessarily, rather than a consensus with some outlying positions. I mean, technically, that's still a split. Whether you split your log for firewood and you take off 5%, you've still split the log. Sure, fine. Sure. But when it comes to debate, that sounds to me like consensus with some outliers. What do you think about that?
I haven't heard any debate. Where's the debate? All the debate seems to be shut down. I don't see Peter McCullough jumping on, you know, one or two or three news in, or, you know, people who have got incredible credentials. I just don't see. We seem to be going to these people who are the go-tos for the government, and that's fine, I guess. It's more thing that, you know, like I said before, it's not for me to speak to these in the medical terms. I don't understand it enough to comment, right? It's things like, and you're right, yeah, I don't know, here we go though, but it's things like why on earth, I mean, name another vaccination where the pharmaceutical company doesn't want you to know the contents for 75 years, or doesn't have any safety history, or, again, medical professionals being shut down in terms of their dissent, or people forfeiting body autonomy, or possibly being threatened with losing their livelihoods.
That one's easy because, like, if you join the armed forces or the police or whatever, you always had to have a certain number of vaccines. If you're a nurse or a doctor, you always have to have a certain number of vaccines. There's a roster you have to take, or you can't be a nurse. That's an easy one to answer, because there are lots of jobs out there that if you're not vaccinated, you can't have various jobs. Like that was one of the things that was always most peculiar about the pushback by people saying the medical situation. But if you look at what a nurse has to have vaccinations for, it's a long list, or else they can't be a nurse. So that, I mean, that's, I don't think, I'm not trying to negate everything or debate with you on everything.
I'm not completely up for the conversation, right? But again, I don't have any answers necessarily, but I had a hell of a lot of questions. One of the things was why have we not heard about early intervention therapies anywhere? I don't know.
Like what? What do you mean?
Yeah, well, precisely. Have you heard of any of them?
But what are they? I don't even understand what you've said. Early intervention therapies, what is that?
Yeah. So I think it's worth looking into it. I think it's interesting.
But how do you have, but
about these?
I would think an early intervention therapy is something to stop you getting from COVID. That would be an early intervention. Is that what you're meaning?
No. And I'd just be going from memory here, unfortunately, but particularly because we had COVID, right? So, well, I had COVID, and I got that just after I stopped off coming back from Wellington, and I was fine in Wellington, and then stopped off, met a mate in Auckland to do some work for a couple of hours, and he sat in my car and then called me on the Sunday and said, oh, man, I've just found out that I might have given you something. I was like, oh, bro.
Oh, okay. No.
Yeah, okay, cool. But then I looked up those, McCullough early interventions, and, you know, a lot of vitamin C, a lot of them in vitamin D, quercetin at the time, just that kind of stuff. We're told to have Panadol and sit at home and wait till you can't breathe and then call the ambulance or something. It just seems odd. But that's what I mean by that. And it's on the hard thing, again, I'm not a medical professional, I'm just saying that's my experience, is that I haven't heard our media talk about that.
So it almost sounds like you're saying be as healthy as you can prior to getting COVID. I mean, because I've heard that conversation a lot about things like losing weight and getting healthy, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, eliminating whatever comorbidities you may have, sure. No, it was more like once you test a positive for it, what you could do versus having Panadol and waiting to not be able to breathe. But things like, I don't know, why do we suddenly trust a company that is known for making false claims about their products, you know, like $3.5 billion fines, record-breaking $1.5 billion in criminal fines, and what suddenly makes them so trustworthy? Those things just, they leave me very suspicious.
Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe I'm a sheep, but I, and maybe if I say it like this, the perspective that you have on the world at the moment, it won't gel with it, but I guess I've sort of trusted, quote, the science, end quote, in general. Mm-hmm. And I've spoken to a lot of people, not just the, because of what I do in my other job, like a daily news show, you know, sure. I've had on probably 10 or 12 scientists, you know, biologists, people who are working in that field, up to and including like Dr. Anna Brooks, who's probably New Zealand's preeminent long COVID researcher at the moment. So I listen to those people because I'm not that, like, for example, for me, and we may be in a different position on this, but it feels to me like the government was following the science for a long time, and I'm not even expecting you to necessarily agree with that, but now they're following populist opinion by removing masks and that kind of stuff, and like in schools, in a place where we're still vulnerable to this virus. So what I'm doing is talking to the people who are in the labs doing the research, and they're saying the government's doing the wrong thing at the moment. So I'm not listening to the government. I'm listening to the people in the labs. And yeah, that's cool. Sort of what I'm basing my research or my position on. And the people in the labs, there was one the other day, one of the doctors the other day, and then probably not going to be the same doctors that you hold in any necessary authority. But when it comes to this, who is actually saying to the government now, where are you getting your data from? Because we're supposed to be advising you, and we're saying something completely contrary to the policies you're putting out there. So yeah, I don't get my information from the Ministry of Health or the government or anything.
Yeah,
I get it from the epidemiologists and the researchers who are doing the actual work. That's what I do anyway to make my decisions.
Yep. Look, here's my personal experience. I got it. I was sick for a night. I didn't die. Certainly didn't feel any worse than I have from a really bad flu. In fact, not at all. So that, again, leaves me from an experiential point of view going, well, hang on. It didn't materialize as I was told it was going to. It didn't make sense to lose the last 2 years' worth of work.
Yeah, got it. It
was that cold, man. You know, that's really it. And I particularly, you know, doctors, nurses, policemen, firemen, army, I know people from all walks of life have lost their living, have lost their homes, have lost everything. Based on that, I get the fear around it, I suppose, and I get the fear of people mostly losing their jobs, and that's what I'm starting to see now, that actually is that now that people actually got it, and they're like, why was I subjugated? Why did I comply so much when this is all it did to me?
So your perspective is kind of the evidence of Omicron and the way it's working through community now means that from day one or whatever day you choose to put on it, we shouldn't have had the restrictions because this is sort of always what it would have been and what it is. That kind of what you're saying, like we're being proved. Are you kind of saying it's been proven now it's not as bad? I mean, look what's happening in society now. So why the restrictions? Is that sort of what you're saying?
I'm saying people have lost their livelihoods over something that they probably didn't need to.
I had a teacher on right before the mandate came in. Like I think it was coming on a Tuesday or something, and I spoke to her on the Sunday.
Yeah,
and she was someone who said that she wasn't going to take the vaccine. So she was going to lose her job on that Tuesday night. I asked her why she was going to lose her job, and she was talking about the mandate not being vaccinated. And I asked her why she wasn't going to take the vaccine, and she had a whole bunch of reasons, which obviously I disagreed with because, you know, I think it's been proven to be pretty significantly safe. I know that there aren't, it's not perfect. Nothing's perfect in the world out there. And I know, I think that you had experience as your brother with myocarditis or something.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yep. But
that's what we're passionate about.
Say again.
That's why I'm so passionate about it. Seeing him go through that.
Totally. Like I look, I've said bluntly, our personal experiences drive our position. Like there is a, there's only a couple of people that the Ministry of Health talk about having died from the, likely from the vaccine, and one of them was a 20-something year old plumber in Dunedin. Now I've got no problems at all thinking about his girlfriend going, 100% of my boyfriends died from the vaccine. That's her perspective, you know. So it's like I almost wouldn't challenge her, even slightly on the overall data, but I know from reading and researching on all sorts of things that anecdotal evidence is not a very good representative of overall data. Like it doesn't necessarily represent the data. But I also, so I can see both things, right? Anecdotal evidence doesn't necessarily represent the data, but I also know that as human beings, our character is we will base our decisions and our positions on our own experiences. So I can totally see both paths. But I was saying to this teacher, I wanted to drill down into why, because there seemed to be a position in her and others that I won't be forced to take a vaccine. I will not be forced to take a vaccine. And I said to her, so when are you getting the vaccine? And she said, I'm not. I said, so you're not being forced. And there was a little bit of umming and ahhing, and there was a little bit of pushback. And there was actually someone, well, she didn't have to get the vaccine.
No one's
forced anyone to get a vaccine, because people have chosen not to get a vaccine. If everyone was being forced.
You don't think the threat of losing your job is coercion?
That's possibly a slightly different term. Now, what I said to her was, I don't want this to sound patronizing, and I don't want this to sound judgy, but in life all the time, people make really hard choices for their own personal ethics and their own beliefs. And I used an example, and maybe it's not a fair example, but I know people in Auckland who were in their 20s could see very clearly they were never going to get on the housing market, had a young family, wanted to be able to bring up. So they moved out of Auckland to a different part of the country. They moved away from their support groups. They moved away from their whānau. They, you know, because they wanted to get a house and they wanted to get on the ladder. Now, that was a hard choice they made, but no one forced them to leave Auckland. But they made a really hard choice based on what they wanted. Possibly what I know is going to be the response to this is that this choice is an unfair choice. It's a coercion. It's a whatever. But ultimately, everyone had a choice to either get a jab or not get a jab. And some people had to make a really hard choice that if they don't get a jab, there's going to be serious financial circumstances that come with it. Now, let me make clear, I'm not actually saying so that's fair. I'm just observing that's the situation. And she eventually admitted that, yes, it was a choice. She made a choice, and her choice meant that she couldn't work anymore. So...
yeah, I mean, it's choice wrapped in coercion, isn't it? It's not much of a choice.
Well, it's only really, I mean...
Would they have taken it if they were able to keep their jobs? Probably still no.
Well, no, I would think not. Because the reason that I found that most people who said no to the vaccine was based around claims that they made, which in my opinion, not being a medical person, but in my opinion, were fairly easily debunked. But that's still their choice to make, you know. We always make choices. Sometimes we make right choices, sometimes we make wrong choices, sometimes we make wrong choices that we think are right, sometimes we make right choices that we think are wrong, sometimes we make choices that are neutral and make no, you know, right or wrong implication on our lives. That's what that was.
Well, maybe I do, but again, I think, you know, I think what you said before, my personal experience is that, well, not only has my brother ended up with pericarditis from it, I mean, it's a life-changing disease now for him through the rest of his life, probably.
Yeah.
But there's a local cop up here who now can't work probably ever again. There's a airline pilot I know who can't work again. There's, you know, it's just an isolated incident. It's not like or two people, although if you were to listen to the Ministry of Health data, perhaps you'd think there was. And I think we know we've got more people are finding people in their own communities, in their own families, in their workplaces who are now coming with, you know, getting these horrible afflictions that Pfizer have now released, you know, what there's a couple of hundred different afflictions you can have potentially that they admit because of having this now. So that, I mean, that concerns me, sure. And do I, well, here's another thing. Like, I saw some data the other day, I think it was life insurance data. And it seemed like there was a really heavy correlation between this life insurance data and what do they call it, excess mortality rates. And again, look, I'm no expert, man. I'm no statistician. I can't sit there and, you know, pull all these numbers out. But on the face of it, it concerns me. Why we aren't just being more upfront?
And maybe that's the difference between, you know, two parts of this conversation, is that both parties, maybe it's not both, maybe it's a rainbow, there's multitudes, but it feels like there's kind of two parts to this conversation. They both feel like they're being upfront. They both feel like they're giving out all the information, and they both feel like the other side is not. So, because when you say, why aren't we being upfront about this? I feel like I have all the information I need, and I'm not your regular Joe. Like, I do talk, I literally talk and converse with, if you go have a look at the, it's called Big Hairy News, the daily news show we do. If you go have a look at the, if you go have a look at the data bank of all our shows, you'll see Michael Baker, you'll see Susie Wiles, you'll see Anna Brooks, you'll see Michael Plank, you'll see all these people to talk about this, as long as, along with hundreds of other academics that have been on to talk about other things. So I don't feel like I've missed anything. And I'm not your regular person, because I talk to the people in the labs, but I also research heavily. I mean, I'm on the internet 10 hours a day to do my two or three jobs. So I see everything. I watch the right wing, you know, talking points coming out of America. You know, I watch the Stephen Crowders of this world, and I watch the Dave Rubens, and I watch all that as well. So I see it and I intake it, and I feel like I've got a really good grasp of the perspectives, and I'm really comfortable sitting where I am. And I'll tell you something. I don't think I've ever, because you know what you say when you make an absolute and someone goes, but what about on this date at this moment where you pulled a face? Oh, fuck, I don't know. I don't think I've ever mocked, harassed, abused, been mean to someone of the opposing view. Because what's the point?
It's major, right? Yeah.
What's the point? But what's the point in doing that? I mean, like, obviously you and I aren't in the same place when it comes to this, but I've loved this conversation we've just had for the past hour and a quarter, you know, about all sorts of things, including dogs.
Yeah, and look, I think that's important that you just touched on that, because I feel there's been this witch hunt where I would say there's ridicule, there's embarrassment, there's mockery, there's attempt to tear down people who have a different or dissenting or questioning view, or and then I think there's certain people in prominent roles who probably need to be held to account for, you know, vilifying those who have chose not to be vaccinated, and they fuel this angry social media mob, and that's not the Kiwi way, man. What was the recent kind of, we are them? Well, we are them unless they're them.
But that is the Kiwi way. I'm sorry. I mean, I used to work as a talkback host on Newstalk ZB, and how many conversations I had around why aren't migrants assimilating into the community? And I used to say to them, we'll invite them into your house for dinner. And how do you assimilate into a community without being invited through the door? You fucking idiot. I didn't say you fucking idiot on ZB because broadcasting standards. Look, the only thing I would say in response to what you've just said, remembering I ingest everything, right, is what you've just said could equally be applied to both sides.
I don't deny that either. Look, yeah. I'm guilty of, as we've touched on earlier on. Yeah. You know, so I think that's a problem, but I did I feel that, or was I responding to the fire?
Either way, it's a. I mean, like, if your instance was a response, there are plenty of other instances. All you got to do is get on Twitter where it's the opposite. It's the first move, and then the other side is the response. So it's a bit of a, again, it's a chicken and egg conversation again.
But there's, look, well, I think we can agree that there's a huge amount of toxicity there. I'm not even talking in the veins just yet, but a huge amount of toxicity in terms of how we're treating each other. And I just think it's time to back off the pedal in terms of the toxicity on either side. I don't think we have to remember that compassion is important and empathy is important. And we do have more in common with each other than we have different from one another. I think there's no reason for persecution. We've all made our choices now.
Yeah. Yeah, look, and look, I mean, it's probably quite a nice place to leave it. I mean, I loved and enjoyed the conversation. I do have one beef to pick with you, obviously, and that's why aren't you coming to Dunedin?
Oh, right.
Hello.
Yes.
So this is the original, the point that we connected. You've got a nationwide tour starting up next week, 17th of June, this week, next week. Christchurch, Ashburton, Napier, Hamilton, Te Awamutu, Invercargill, Nelson. Where's Dunedin?
Dunedin's probably still where Dunedin was. I think the thing is this, I'm not entirely sure that we won't go into another lockdown, man. So I'm kind of reluctant to book lots and lots of shows. I'm just doing small shows for now.
Yeah.
And the idea is just, I'm approaching it very, very differently. I'm not going in guns blazing with an acoustic guitar and trying to recreate these op shop songs or babysitter songs live with an acoustic guitar. I'm actually having starting with a meditation, like a group guided meditation. And I was going through it last night, just sitting in the garage doing these meditations with sacred sounds. So I had my bowls out and it felt very shamanic, even though I was there on my own, and was toning, singing these tones and getting the bass and the fundamental and a few octaves and just contrasting sounds and instruments and voices and just trying to add colors and the harmonics. But the idea being to just to create a sonic bath that will just wash over us all whilst we go into a state of meditation. And the idea with that is really to find a deep sense of connectedness again. And I guess come back to what we just discussed, and that we actually have a lot more in common with each other than we have different. And I want to also leave people with, look, I'm no expert in meditation, but I've done it for 20 years, and so I'd like to leave people with a few tools on how they can write their own meditations, on how they can, you know, meet some of their own universal human needs by meditating, you know, whether that's back to, I don't know, celebration of their own lives, or, you know, connection or authenticity or community, family, belonging, all those things, or anything actually that anyone brings into that space where they feel a gap and they can, I think we're talking about it at the beginning. There's a sense of praying, right? I think when you're in meditation state where there's a sense of solace and a sense of quietude. And I'd like to be able to have people leave those venues feeling like they've got the tools to be able to help. I know that helps me cope a lot more. It helps me come back to my center and helps me feel stable. So if there's something I can pass on, other than just have a great time after that, and I'll play as many songs as I can get through that night. And I think that's the other thing. I'm not, like I said, I'm not using my guitar. I've actually gone into the vault and the hard drives, and I've made stems of all these songs. So I'll actually be remixing the songs, all these songs live. I'm effectively mixing in the studio out on the road, so making new versions of these songs whilst I'm performing and singing along with them. So it'll be interesting. I think it'll be fun. And look, should we get through all these shows and the ability to mix and mingle, sure, man, I'll start adding gigs, start rolling them out and keep doing it. But look, after having had a baby, man, it's, I feel reluctant to leave home.
I get it.
You know, I just really love being home more than I ever have. So I feel like if I can put myself to service, to use to people, then I should probably be doing that as well.
If people want to find out more about the actual the events coming up, what's the best place for people to go and find it? Is it Event Finder? Let me just bring up Event Finder. Is it Event Finder? Is that the best place?
I would say if you want to buy tickets there, there are a few shows. There's one in Te Awamutu that isn't on Event Finder. So perhaps go to my Facebook page, which is just Jason Kerrison Music. And I'll update that as often as I possibly can. Oh, yeah, just reminded me. My friend and I, Lee Franklin, have just released a new song called Someone Should Love You, which is very cool. It's been 8 years in the making, so sitting on a hard drive for quite some time, and some good friends of mine playing on that record too. And yeah, I love it. It's actually a really lovely song. So
cool, man.
Jump on.
How's the ticket sales going? Good response so far?
Yeah, pretty good. I mean, I can imagine, I can understand people's reluctance, but, you know, usually if you can sell, you know, 20-30% of the shows out before you get to the night, Kiwis are just renowned for rocking up on the day. So I think we're doing okay. But, you know, please come and grab some tickets. It'd be good to see you.
All right. Jason Kerrison. Hey, man, thanks so much for joining us today. I've been looking forward to this chat for a while, and I appreciate you giving us some time from the winterless north. And all the best for the tour.
Yeah, right. Thanks, man.
You can't say cold when it's, you know, currently 7 degrees in Dunedin, and I'm about to go put the fire on.
Yeah, I'm about to put my fire on too, actually. But I appreciate
thanks for joining us, though, dude. And then, look, anytime, love to talk again, love to catch up. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Pleasure, man. Awesome. Thank you.